Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Bibliobanter. I'm Lexi Smith, and I'm here with...
I'm Adam Picar.
And we are here to bring an episode all about, sort of, National Reading Month.
Yeah, it's March is National Reading Month, and...
Huzzah!
You know, as librarians, like while I may work in the tech field of the library, I am very, very into getting people to read.
Yes, we love literacy. Woohoo! And so what I kind of thought of doing this episode is I researched and looked up a bunch of random obscure facts about books, reading, libraries, people who love to read, like just a bunch of random, some of them are really funny, some of them are really... obscure, like I didn't do much fact checking on the really funny ones just because I want to believe that they're true. So.
Funnier ones are always better, you know. It's okay, you know.
Yeah, so I'm just going to start spewing facts to Adam and he's going to kind of like blind react and we'll talk about him and chat about him like we always do.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So I'm going to start off with one. A lot of people probably already know about this holiday in Iceland. It's a tradition I am not going to attempt to pronounce it, but it is most closely translated as the Christmas Flood of Books. It's a literary Christmas tradition that begins with giving and receiving and reading of new books on Christmas Eve. So the whole point is Christmas Eve, you are giving books away to your family, your friends, and then you're supposed to spend the whole entire night reading.
Oh, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
Isn't that neato? I heard about this on Tumblr years ago, which is so random. But not only that, this part I didn't know. So not only is Iceland full of readers, clearly, since they have this Christmas reading tradition, they also have more books published, sold, and read per capita than literally any other country in the world.
Now, that's amazing, given that Iceland is not a very big country.
I know. And I meant to look up how many people they're actually, like, how much their population actually is, because I'm sure that matters as far as ratios and
all
stuff.
All right, well, I got to look this up.
Yeah, because I'm not entirely sure, but that completely blew me away. Like, to just think that more books published than any other country in the world. Like, that's crazy.
As of 2021, 372,520 people.
Wow, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more than I was thinking. To be fair, I don't know much.
It's about the size of a small city, but, you know, it's a small island, so.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. But I couldn't believe, like, I saw that.
They also hate pineapple on pizza.
What? Blasphemous.
I know.
Come on, live a little, have a life.
Which is really funny since from everything I've learned about the Icelandic people is they're incredibly adventurous and it's just like, really, that's that's the line?
That's the boundary, that's where you're not going to go crazy? That's everybody loves pie. Actually, not everybody. Either you love it or hate it.
There's actually a very firm divide on that one. I love it.
Me too. Come on. There's got to be some Icelandic people out there who like it. Reach out.
The secret Icelandic underground.
pineapple lovers. Pineapple pizza lovers. We'll have to start our own. I think you should look. I do recommend that people look up what the Icelandic Christmas tradition is called because it's spelled really cool. It's got a lot of different like accents over the letters.
Nice.
So like it is literally, I can't even attempt to pronounce it. But I think we should bring that sort of celebration into the States.
We absolutely should. I mean, I already do kind of a thing where there's when it comes to giving Christmas gifts to people, I believe in there are four things to give, and that is something you want, something you need, something to wear, something to read.
Oh,
yeah,
I love that. Yeah. I really make a habit, especially with my friends. I'm kind of just known as the book giver. Like, I just give books. How can I not? They're my whole life, and even if you're not a reader, like, I'm going to try and find a book for you. So it's kind of like you're going to get one whether you like it or not.
Oh, I've done some. So I've had family members that don't do reading, and I find like just photography collections of things that I know they're interested in. Like
there's so you can find like video game compendiums. You can find art collections, cookbook. There's something out there.
Absolutely. Like just a book of photographs from like World War II or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just, you can find some kind of collection that will interest somebody or something. It's just a matter of figuring out what medium they like and things like that. And, you know, I'm also the firm believer that, hey, guess what? you're getting a Final Fantasy this Christmas. It's a book. It's a very long book that you play the main character in.
Ooh.
Because that's what it is. That's what video games are, as far as I'm concerned now.
Yeah.
They're authorless literature. I kind of did my master's degree on that whole concept and everything.
That's so sweet. Yeah. I love that. I love looking at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
But moving from Iceland, now we're moving over to Sweden. And this was very fun to me. The Alnarp Library in Sweden has a 217-volume collection of wooden books called the Tree Library.
Oh, that's cool.
Each book describes a specific tree, and its binding is the bark, moss, lichens found on that species, and the book interiors hold even more natural surprises. So if you look up photos of this library, it is so cool. Like every single...
Now, what's it called again?
The Alnarp Library.
Alnarp, okay.
But I did try to look it up just by that, but you have to type in the tree collection or something like that, and then it will pop up. It's so cool. Some of the books, like, they're all bound in the bark of the tree. And then they'll have, like, moss growing from... It's so cool and, like, all natural.
I'm looking it up. How is Alnarp...
A-L-K... Nope, sorry. A-L-N-A-R-P. It is so, so neat. And I love trees. So.
Oh, those are really cool.
I know.
Yeah, like, oh, man. That... Wow. Yeah, like... Oh, the knot, like they got like the little volume symbols looking like in the knot holes and everything. Like, that's really cool.
It's so much cooler than you expect it to be. Because, like, when you hear wooden book, you're like, okay, like, I've probably seen those before. But it's to, they model it after the tree. Obviously, they're shaped like books, they're not shaping them like trees. But, like, when you open them up, some of them will have like, samples of like the acorns or like the seeds, like just all the leaves that fall from them. It's really, really cool. And I didn't know that I needed to go to this place in Sweden, but now I absolutely know I need to. And I thought that was super, super cool.
That's awesome.
I know. And now moving from Sweden to the States, I learned this a couple years ago. You've probably heard this. It's very morbid and very fun. The Harvard University Library has at least 4 books bound in human skin.
Oh, so we're going Evil Dead on this one.
yes, we are. Evil Dead, Hocus Pocus, all the fun witchy stuff.
Are any of them at all named Necronomicon?
No. Nope, unfortunately. I think it said that they're law books. Why would it be... Maybe I mistyped.
Maybe they're against the law?
That can't be right. Law books bound in human skin? No, that cannot be right. But I did buy I bought a book a couple of years ago, and it's called Dark Archives by Megan Rosenbloom. We do have it at the library.
It's not bound in human flesh, is it?
Yeah, no. That is unfortunately not bound. Well, not unfortunately, I guess. It is fortunately not bound in human skin. But it is all about not just books bound in human skin, but just other morbid things that are found in books and things like that. So if the macabre is not your thing, don't check it out. But it's pretty
cool.
And it will tell, and she goes into like research, like why Harvard still has these books. We don't know whose skin the books are bound in. Like, we don't have like a name or anything, but they assume, I did read this, that they assume from who the books were written by, they were one of them at least was a scientist that did experiments and stuff on like cadavers. So it had to have been a person that was already passed away. So
allegedly.
Alleged. But we have no way to prove this. And they still just have 4 books that are just bound in human skin. Can you imagine? I don't even think I would notice though. Like if I weren't told, how would
I
know?
I mean, probably. We're mammals. It probably has the consistency of leather.
Yeah.
You know?
So, like, but can you imagine just like your peruse? I mean, it's not just open to the public. Like, you can't just go check out the books. But can you imagine?
Dang, there goes
like,
that field trip.
Like, can you imagine being a patron and just walking and like? It made me think like, how? Because I worked in a special collections and rare book room, and we knew allegedly we knew all about our materials, but what if we didn't know what some of the books were bound in? And I'm like, did I touch?
Yeah, that would be really weird.
That would be a really weird thing to stumble across. But isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah, I like that, though. That's a neat, weird fact.
I know. I thought, for some reason, everybody had heard of that. I don't know why. Let's see. Oh, this one should not come as a surprise. This is a statistic.
All right, hit me.
This is says, avid reading throughout a lifetime may reduce the rate of memory decline by as much as 32%. And it is also more likely to reduce your chances of getting dementia. It didn't mention Alzheimer's, but it did say it will reduce your chances of getting dementia.
Mm-hmm.
I thought 32% was pretty big. That it should, and I did fact check this. A bunch of different studies have been done on this.
It keeps the brain exercised, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Because end of the day, the brain is an organ and everything like that, but it benefits from that exercise, working the organ.
Has to be exercised, has to be moved around and think. And then they say, like, if you're worried about your memory decline, to, like, do puzzles, take different routes to work every day, like, change it up, like, variety is good. And nothing's more, books are totally a bunch of different variety of things.
Oh, yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You can absolutely change up your genre. But by 32%, I thought that was pretty neat. To follow up that statistic, reading also reduces stress by 68%. That's a huge percentage.
Yeah, that makes kind of a lot of sense. I mean, even when I'm just kind of reading my RPG books, I'm just like, this is content, happy time.
Yeah, it is. Because you're just kind of, you're not turning your brain off, even though that's kind of what it feels like for me sometimes. It feels like I can just turn my brain off, but that's not what's happening. Your brain is actually very active while you're reading.
It's just your brain is active, but can focus on, like, basically one major thing while the rest of the stuff are kind of in autopilot.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not focusing on perhaps problems in your own life.
Exactly.
Or spiraling on things in your own life. You're thinking about literally whatever you're reading about. That's what's set.
Because I'm a child reading like superhero or fantasy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a nearly 40-year-old child.
And I tried to look up I did fact check this percentage as well, but I wanted to look up, I couldn't really find much, not just reading reducing stress, but I feel like what constitutes as reading. That's what I was trying to find with this. Because, like, you know how we talk about literacy comes in all sorts of different forms. Can playing video games be, it's a form of literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So can that also reduce stress by the 68%? It's probably a different percentage, but I just...
Certain games... I think From Software would be increasing stress on a lot of people, given, you know, Elden Ring and Dark Souls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And for me, Baldur's Gate still right now.
I literally got back from a vacation that I said I was going to play Baldur's Gate in. I did not play Baldur's Gate in it because Final Fantasy VII Rebirth came out, and I'm old. I played the original, and I played Remake, and I played this while I was waiting for Baldur's Gate to update on my computer, being like, oh, I'll play this for, like, an hour, and
yeah,
then...
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
An hour.
But, yeah, no.
It's
the entire week was playing that.
That's so fun. I'm glad you got a new game to obsess over.
It's really good.
I'm really bad about, like, well, not bad. When I play a game, I don't want to play anything else. So I've only been playing Baldur's Gate for a long time now. And I just still haven't finished it. But that's because I have so many other things I like to do, too. Now we got another fun, sort of a series of facts. So I don't know about you. Do you like the smell of old books?
Yeah. Musty old tomes.
Yes. I thought you said toes. I was like, ew.
No, not that. No. Tomes.
I love the smell of books. Old books, new books, I don't care. I love the smell of books.
Mm-hmm.
And I did know this just from my studies, just from my time of working in a rare book room, that what's happening when you smell old books, they're dying. They're chemically, like, their organic compounds are breaking down. So what we're smelling in old books is just the chemical, like, it's chemically just breaking down, which makes sense.
Interesting.
And it's kind of morbid to think that they're dying, but they're just, like, breaking down. And that's why, like, you know, old books have a very distinct smell. But the University of London did a little smell test where they had volunteers smell 8 different volatile organic compounds. So old books was one of them. They didn't have like an old book sitting in front of the person, right? Because they didn't want the person to know what they were smelling. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to respond with either, ah, yes, I like that smell, or this smells like this, or ew, no, I hate this smell. So including the old books, they also had organic compounds of laundry detergent, fish, which is gross. And the fun fact from this study is that more than a third of the 80 participants said that the book organic compound smelled like coffee and chocolate, and it was their favorite smell of all the different smells that they smelled.
Oh, man, I got to get blindfolded and have people just put various things in front of me and see if I can pick out the book.
Right? I know. I was thinking this would be such a fun science fair project for kids. I think I did like a blind taste
test. Let's do it during summer reading.
It is adventure.
Yeah, this is adventurous.
Come smell things. That's a good idea. We should write that down. But the research also showed that the organic materials, when they're exposed to light, water, and heat for an extended period of time, so like if you have a really old historical book sitting in front of you, they release the organic compounds that smell like almond and vanilla specifically.
Ooh.
And those are two of my favorite flavors of all time. So I'm like, no wonder I love the smell of books. Almonds and vanilla, like that's so cozy. That's so candle.
We love the word cozy here.
But I did fact check that as well. And it's true. It's true.
Sweet.
That the compound, like they do smell of almonds and vanilla. I don't know why I didn't go further into that, but I'm very pleased to hear
that's
that.
That's just neat.
I know. The next one should not be a surprise. I don't think it's not to me anyway. According to a study by Kingston University, people who read fiction books, actually this is a surprise to me, people who read fiction genre, so you know, fiction is stories that are not true or made up. People who read this tend to be nicer, more empathetic, and more open-minded due to the state of the consciousness that the reading puts that reader in.
Well, that kind of makes a lot of sense. You know, the idea of, especially because if you read something that's like very different, like about somebody very different from you, it puts you in their shoes and everything.
Exactly. Like walk a mile in my shoes. Everybody always says that reading fiction can do that. And it's been studied. It literally can do that. It can cause you to be more empathetic.
My brother has told me to try walking a mile in his shoes, and that's not a thing that I'm going to do because his feet are twice the size of mine.
Oh my gosh, twice the size.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. I just loved that though, but also this is not to throw shade to anybody who doesn't like reading fiction. If you're reading, read whatever you want to read. It does not have to be fiction, but I just thought that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like if your favorite thing is like reading books on science and stuff like that, read science books. That's awesome. Learn things.
Read textbooks.
Yeah. If you, again, prefer comics and stuff like that, yeah, do that. Which also, speaking of facts,
yes,
comic industry, I should say the manga industry had a massive blow earlier this month when Akira Toriyama passed away. For those who don't know, Akira Toriyama was like one of the four horsemen of manga and anime, being the creator of Dragon Ball, and in Japan, more importantly, Dr. Slump, which is where we got Arale and thus all the movements that Mario does.
Which is pretty neat.
Yep. He was in the process of working on Dragon Ball Daima, which was a return to form of comedy first, martial arts second. And I mean, it's crazy how much how much of an impact he had. Like, I literally remember looking up on the social media feeds, and the day it was announced was also the State of the Union.
Oh wow.
And nobody was talking about that. They were all talking about Toriyama.
Aww.
Just like, wow, yeah, I was shocked. Like,
yeah,
I know several countries made official statements about it because of how important his work was to them, that they were like, we as a country are giving honor to the passing of Akira Toriyama. And
wow.
It's like, yeah, like, Like Dragon Ball, hate Dragon Ball.
It had impact.
It impacted. It impacted big.
Well, and so. How you were saying Orales, am I saying that?
Orale, yes.
Orale. How the way that character looks informed Mario, mm-hmm. and also the way she runs.
Yeah, because she ran with the arms outstretched, with her fingers pointed up the way that Mario does before he's about to jump and fly, and she was the one that first had the Tanuki suit.
Yeah, like all inspired by this one character, just that one character. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's very cool, and like he had a big impact in video gaming. What with Dragon Quest, like being all done the art by him, and one of my favorite RPGs of all time, Chrono Trigger.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
R.I.P.
We lost a real one there, and it was. Apparently, here's an interesting fact I learned from mangakas, which is a Japanese term for comic artists. Their life expectancy is about 20 years lower than the rest of Japan because of how stressful the position is. Like, yeah, it's like in Japan, the average life expectancy is like 82 to 90, whereas for mangakas, it's like 62 to 70, and he passed away at 68.
No way.
Yeah.
That is so young.
I know, right?
But, I mean, I guess it's within that scope, that life expectancy, but oh my gosh. 20 years, that's significant. Mm-hmm. Why are they so stressed out?
I mean, honestly, it's a very stressful field because, you know, they're usually the one that's doing all the writing and art. And
just a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure, especially like if you do have a hit, you got to keep it coming, you know, of thing.
Oh, gosh. So. That's not what we like to hear.
No, so let's switch to a more fun fact.
Yeah, okay. Well,
but
R.I.P.
Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. You will be missed, and I hope there's a wonderful picture of him being like what his paradise is, and it's just looking at magazines with a model car kit, can of cola, and smoking a cigarette and having some senbei cookies. And yeah. I'm like, bro, I hope that is your paradise right now.
I hope so too.
Like. Man, simple.
He deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
Get the well-deserved rest. So my next fact, this is very close to me because I actually just got a tattoo after this. This is the oldest library motto ever. It was the very first inscription that was ever over a library. And it was originally in Greek. Not going to try and pronounce it. And the letters aren't even like... decipherable, but it translates to house of healing for the soul. And the first inscription was over the funerary tomb of Pharaoh Ramses II.
Oh,
which is pretty neat. And you're like, okay, so it was over like a funerary tomb. That's bizarre. But it also held his library of something like 100,000 papyrus scrolls.
Oh,
he wanted to have
his
library.
Awesome.
Like he wanted to be buried with his books. And that's so me.
Oh, nice.
And so it was the oldest library motto. They called libraries houses of healing for the soul. And I read that years ago in college, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I did get it tattooed on my spine, and it hurt really, really bad. And this was just last week, so I'm still healing from it. But I thought, well, that is a fun fact. Because I feel like nobody knows about that. House of healing for the soul. What a perfect way, in my opinion, to describe a library. And just the fact that it was over a funerary tomb, over 100,000, like
yeah, Ramses the Great and everything, man.
Uh huh. Isn't that neato?
Yeah, that's awesome. Full name: Ramesu Mary Amun, born of Re, beloved of Amun. Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool to read up on. There, the one article that I actually read for a college class. Had the Greek inscription, had like a picture of it. I can't find it though, and I can't get access to the article because I'm not, my student ID doesn't work any longer. But I'm sure with my library and investigation skills, I could figure it out. But there's still other ways that I verified this as well, and I do have the URL to the article.
That's awesome. I mean, anything, which you said you're having trouble with the Greek name.
Yeah.
Ozymandias.
Whoa. What? Wait, did you just pronounce it?
Yeah, Ozymandias. So, behold my works, ye mighty in despair.
Whoa.
It was a little comic tangent.
Ooh.
One of the villains from The Watchmen.
Oh.
Ozymandias.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I love The Watchmen.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. It all comes full circle. But I just thought that was really neat, and I want to spread the word, because I love calling libraries houses of healing for the soul. It's also like it can also translate to like house of soul healing. Like, it's not perfect translation, but it's you get the gist. It's a place for your soul to be mended, which I just think is really cool and noble. And then on the topic of the oldest library motto, I wanted to look up what the world's oldest known library was, because we all know about the Library of Alexandria.
We'd know more if somebody hadn't burned it down.
I know. If I could go back in time and prevent one historical event,
yeah,
That'd be one of them. But the actual oldest known library was founded sometime in the 7th century BC for the royal contemplation of the Assyrian ruler Shurbanipal, located in modern-day Iraq. And the site included a trove of some 30,000 cuneiform tablets.
Ooh, that would be so cool.
And it was organized according to subject matter, which is like how kind of the Dewey Decimal and Library of Congress, like that's how libraries organize them today. So I thought that was pretty cool. I didn't know that that the oldest one was in Iraq. I just thought that was pretty neat. With 30,000 cuneiform tablets, imagine writing books on cuneiform tablets or stories on cuneiform tablets. Like, that just seems so hectic.
Instead of getting them by volume, you get them by page.
Oh my gosh, part one. Here's five paragraphs. And I actually went on history.com, and I think they even have like an episode about this oldest known library. I forgot to write down the episode name, but you can look that up on history.com. So I thought that would be cool.
I kind of want to see a bit of this. Have you ever watched, okay, a slight tangent. Have you ever watched Kunk on Earth?
No.
Okay, first on Netflix, and you should watch it because it is absolutely hilarious. Because it is totally like a mockumentary type thing.
Oh, I love that.
There's one point, like she's just talking about like a bunch of people, about like people were doing a bunch of things because they didn't have smartphones yet, things like that. And oh, it's just great. Like, there was one point, it's like, would you say that Jesus was the first victim of cancel culture? And the person's like, I witnessed it. She's like, no. Could you turn to the camera and say that? I'm trying to film a documentary here.
That does sound really good. It sounds funny.
It's hilarious. Don't take it seriously. It's five episodes. It's wonderful. She's apparently doing another one soon. And there's one that she did. I gotta find it. It's not on Netflix right now, but it's Kunk on Shakespeare, and I would love to see
that. Oh, I've heard of that.
So.
Oh, I've heard of that. Okay, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And those of you at home, if you're looking for something funny, the veins of like Spinal Tap or things like that, look up Kunk on Earth. It's great. If you have Netflix, watch it. Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. I have a little section now of like, did you know? So this is just like, and these, I will, a little caveat, I did not fact check these. I kind of fact checked one of them, but I'll get into it. And they're just random. So did you know that Teddy Roosevelt, the president, Teddy Roosevelt, read on average one book a day, even while he was president?
That's crazy. I did not know that. I know he did a lot of weird, crazy things. Like, I have a love hate with Teddy Roosevelt, because on the one hand,
me too.
The man started a speech. I don't know if any of you know this, but I've been shot, and he just continued to do his speech with a bullet in his chest. I'm like,
that's pretty epic.
Dude. There was literally like one of the things said about him when he passed was like, death had to come for Teddy at night, because if Teddy was awake, there would have been a fight.
Yeah, just wouldn't have been able to take him. And he founded like a lot of the national park system, right? Mm-hmm, like he did a lot of really, really cool stuff. And this is another.
Then
cool
there was
fact.
A bunch of terrible things.
I know.
Because that's the thing about presidents; they do a bunch of great stuff and also a bunch of terrible things.
Yeah, they are unfortunately human.
Yeah, human. Yeah, it's.
I never knew that he I will say it's rumored that he read one book a day. So like I said, I didn't fact check this. I don't know that any of his family members were like, yes, I can confirm. But sounds like he's just a really big, or he was a really big reader. Speaking of readers and writers, did you know that J.R.R. Tolkien typed the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy with two fingers?
Oh, Hunt and Peckin, heck yeah! Oh, good.
Typed it, the whole trilogy, not just Lord of the Rings, which is, they're, each book is hefty, but typed it with two fingers because, you know, he didn't know how to do the...
Oh, fantastic.
I love that. It's so wholesome and cute, and it makes me want to just give him a hug.
So, yeah, speaking of having to type, this you ever wonder why our keyboards are set up QWERTY-op?
No.
QWERTY keyboards exist the way they are because of typewriters. The typewriters they were designed, they originally had a different system where it was like all the vowels were on the home row and everything like that.
Oh.
But the problem with the typewriters was the fact that since they were literally slamming little things up in a similar vein to the hammers on a piano.
Right.
People typed so fast, they would get caught with each other and snag. So they made QWERTY to slow down typing.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Yeah. I didn't know that. So now, okay. So
now that... I don't know if that's true, but that's the rumor that I've heard.
Well, that's sweet. That's cool that you just have that knowledge tucked away. Next up, did you know that Wendy, the name, was made up for the book Peter Pan? There was never a recorded Wendy before Peter Pan.
Okay, that can't be real.
I have no idea. I didn't fact check it because I just thought it was really neat.
I can't believe that one. I'm going to be looking that up afterwards. It will go in the description.
Here's where Lexi is wrong. I would love that if you could find, because, I have no idea. I have no idea. I love the name Wendy, and I love Peter Pan, so it's nice to think. And I know, I love Shakespeare. Everybody who knows me knows I love Shakespeare, and I know he created a bunch of words, but he's not the only writer to have ever done that, so I like to spotlight other writers.
Oh, yeah.
Because allegedly, Shakespeare made up names, too. There were names that he made that weren't recorded before anyway, so I think Miranda was one of them from The Tempest.
Here's a question for you. It's the disputed fact. What's your take on the whole Shakespeare was actually not the writer?
No. Disbelieve. I don't believe it. I've watched documentaries on where people think he was more than one person, or like his name wasn't actually William Shakespeare, that was his pen name.
That one I could possibly believe.
I can absolutely believe that. But I don't believe that he was multiple people, or that...
The Francis Bacon one.
Yeah, nope, I don't believe. I don't hate people who believe those, though, because it's fun. It's a fun, like, who knows?
It's a fun little conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I have no actual idea.
Pac-Man conspiracy theories were charming.
Yeah, when they're charming and... yeah, we'll stick with charming. I'm a romantic, and I love to romanticize the idea that Shakespeare was who he
says.
You
literally have his bobblehead on your car dashboard.
I do. I love the idea of him, and I do idolize him in a little bit too much. But that's me.
There's nothing wrong with that. The Bard. He's
Billy the Bard, and I love him, and I love that he came up with like five different ways to spell his last name and just found one that he was like, this one will stick.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know how to spell his name. Like, And I also, there's another rumor about him that wherever he was buried, that his skeleton was buried, and then years and years later, people stole the head of the skeleton, and now the head's just not there. But it's like this... It might even have been proven to not be true, but
I was going to say, I'm not about to go desecrate a tomb to figure that one out.
One of my professors in college was also a huge Shakespeare lover, way more than me. And she said that this was proven to be not true, but I still just love to think about it because I'm like, because it made it sound like it was just a bunch of college students that were like, I wonder if he really is buried down there, and then unburied him, and we're like, let's take the head of the skeleton.
That is such
like
a hazing. That is such a hazing thing.
I know. So I just love that. The next, do you know which? Let me see. Do you know which book has the longest sentence ever written?
No, hit me.
It's Victor Hugo's Les Miserables.
Really? And how long is the sentence?
823 words. And I read that book, and I don't...
Is it a run-on sentence?
that's the thing. I did a lot of research on this one because I was like, that doesn't sound right. And there's a lot of... When you look up what's the longest sentence ever printed in a book, you'll get like five different book titles. So another one that pops up is Absalom, Absalom by William Faulkner, where the sentence is 1,287 words. And then there's The Rotters Club by Jonathan Coeth, the sentence being 13,955 words. Now, both of those, I believe, Absalom, Absalom, I believe, was a short story novella, and The Rotters Club was a novel. I believe both of them were written with no punctuation.
I was going to say, this right. Just sounds like somebody forgot punctuation.
Right. And so I don't really count those, but I did write them down.
Because if you can't get to the point in less than 13,000 words...
we got a problem.
Yeah.
But...
brevity is the soul of wit.
Yes. Yes. But they... So I don't necessarily count those. Those were run-on sentences, and those were creative choices, like The Rotters Club... by Jonathan Coe. He wrote that on purpose to be one long, like, stream of consciousness thing. And James Joyce did that too.
Fair enough.
But with Victor Hugo's Les Miserables, the 823 words, that has, like, comma. Like, that is supposed to be not considered a run-on sentence. I mean, it is a run-on, but, like, it is its own sentence.
It just keeps going and going. That one's for our older listeners.
823 words. I read Les Miserables like maybe 3 years ago, not that long ago, and I truly don't remember reading a page where I'm like, wow, this sentence is taking forever. I don't remember that. So, I mean, props to
you. I mean,
Hugo.
How often do you actually really notice the punctuation unless it comes out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of
times... alarming, unless it's, like, alarmingly wrong.
Yeah. Like, a lot of times, if it's alarmingly wrong, you don't know, you don't really notice it.
And that just props to being a good writer, if I didn't notice, I feel like. Do you know what the first recorded, like, printed story was?
First recorded printed story. No.
The Epic of Gilgamesh.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, Gilgamesh, buddy.
Yes. I love the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Oh, give me that. Oh, give me a Gilgamesh and Enkidu.
I love them together. I love them. They're totally in love. I don't care what anyone says.
They are the perfect example from stepping into the TTRPG thing of an example of a solar and lunar bond for Exalted.
Cool.
Yeah, they recommend using Gilgamesh as the example of the solar with Enkidu the example of the lunar.
That's really cool. Oh, I love that. I read the Epic of Gilgamesh in community college, and that's when I learned that it was the first recorded story, and it was recorded...
See, I just kind of read it and I didn't even know that.
Yeah, how cool is that though? I love that this was the first story. If you haven't read it, we have multiple editions at the library. It's a long poem, basically, just like as many old stories are, because they started as
myths and things.
Yeah, myths and creation stories that you would say out loud. They were oral stories. But somebody wrote the Epic of Gilgamesh on kingdom walls. Like, how you can
that's cool.
I did not fact check that, but I do remember that being in my textbook in community college, so maybe that textbook was wrong, but it said that it was written on, it was just like this huge epic poem that they wrote on like the outside of these walls.
That's sweet.
How freaking cool is that? And that's supposed to be the first recorded story. That's so that literally is epic. The Epic of Gilgamesh. And the Epic of Gilgamesh, I thought was worth mentioning. The author is technically anonymous, but the first scribe to record it was named, I'm going to probably pronounce this not correctly, but it's Sinleki Unini?
Let me see.
Sin?
Yeah, that looks like Sinleki Unini. I don't know if that is correct. Yeah. Feel free to come in and yell at us for mispronouncing it.
Yes, for anything, really. I don't mind being chastised for not pronouncing things right. I try my best.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've always said the phrase, if you find a person who knows a lot of words but they mispronounce them, they probably learn them through reading.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, which is really cool.
Yep.
Now, my last did you know... I know you're going to know the answer to the first part of this question. What is the most read book in the world?
Well, the first part, yeah, definitely, that would be the Bible.
Yes, that's correct. The King James Bible is the technically the most read book in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
What is the second most read book in the world?
What is it?
It is Don Quixote.
Oh, sweet.
That really surprised me. And this is going off based off of, so this is based off of book sales and library checkout numbers. So of course, you know, patrons might check out a book and not actually read a book.
Mm.
Like, we're recognizing this, but the same thing goes for the Holy Bible. But compared to the Bible, the next book that has the most checkouts, singular book, I should say, not like series or anything, that has been checked out or bought from bookstores is Don Quixote. And why didn't I write down the author? Humas, isn't that?
Yeah.
Alexander Humas? No, wrong. Miguel de Cervantes. That mm-hmm. was silly of me. Good thing I have Google. But that is like, and I have had that sitting on my shelf for years, and I know it's a classic, but I would have never guessed Don Quixote. But I helped when I was an academic librarian. I remember I helped quite a few students who were writing essays on this book. They took a whole class devoted to this book. So
oh, like, yeah, because it's incredible. Writing of like just
it's a Spanish epic.
Yeah, exactly. This guy wants to be part of the heroism of old and everything, and he's just, you know,
Very chivalrous. It seems very King Arthur-esque.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's got that romanticized view of what the knights and stuff were, which, fun fact, if you actually studied that, the code of chivalry kind of didn't actually exist.
Nah, that doesn't surprise me.
It was more one of those things to romanticize the thing, to kind of give legitimacy toward knights and everything, because medieval lords weren't exactly the nicest people. They were just like, hey, I want that land. Go kill the peasants and get it for me. And the knight's like, okay, we'll do, boss.
I follow instruction. That is what I do.
Yep.
I mean, I definitely need to read this book.
Though, fun fact, like, you think, so you play games like D&D. What's one thing you know about knight armor in that? Why wouldn't you wear big, chunky, heavy armor?
Because it slows you down?
Yeah, they're wearing that stuff all day, every day, because you get into that, like, you're not getting out of it for today,
and that is
because, so they were carrying, like, 45 pounds of metal all over them. There are people that have done simulations, like, themselves of, like, what it's like to be that. They were agile. Knights could do backflips and things like that in their armor and everything. Like, there are people who wear actual authentic suits. And it's like, no, these were designed with movement in mind. So, yeah, they were designed to articulate to the body. And, yes, you could do flips. You could do things like that. You could do jumping and everything.
That's impossible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is impossible. I can't imagine doing a flip by my, like, in my current normal clothes, let alone.
I could 15 years ago.
That's fair. With that much armor on, they had to be really fit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're walking around for days on end in that. It's like, yeah, you're going to be in shape.
You're gonna build muscle.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to read this book.
It's also really funny where they're like, oh, yeah, like they're like, the reason why different types of weapons were designed the way they were, like the maces and things like that, was because, oh, this person's wearing chainmail. You know what you're not actually going to be able to do with somebody who's wearing chainmail? Chop them. You're not going to be able to really chop them. You have to be really, really, really absurdly strong to be able to chop through that. It was strength through numbers, through all the links and everything.
Yeah.
It was like, no, that's why we use a mace. Just club them. Because you know what? You know what that's not going to protect from? A concussion.
So there was some thought behind the madness. I can understand that. Mm-hmm. I could believe that.
Yeah. And spears. Everybody's all like about swords. Give me spears. We need more spears and things. Like,
yeah. Because keep the enemy at a distance.
Yeah.
Poke them with the stabby end.
Exactly.
Yeah, spears are sweet.
Yep.
I don't have many more facts. The only other things I have, I was looking up yesterday because we were talking about the library with the wooden books based mm-hmm. on trees, France has a library of smells.
Ooh.
Now, if you're like me and you're sensitive to smells, maybe perhaps that's not a library you go check out. I can't even walk past Bath and Body Works without a migraine starting. I'm very sensitive to like overpowering smells. But there in Versailles, France, there's a library of smells. It's got a lot of perfumes, over 3,200 scents. Over some 400 of them, which are no longer made. That'd be cool. I don't think I'd be able to resist not going to that.
It's just like, eat it, migraine, we're doing this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe I'll just do it early in the day and then suffer. I don't know. And Isaac Asimov, the writer, he has a book in nearly every single category in the Dewey Decimal Classification System.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does. It does. But that's kind of... that's really cool and kind of hard to do.
Mm-hmm. I feel like very much so.
It'd be hard to do without, you know, dedicating yourself to doing it. New York has a magician's library.
Ooh, I like that.
I know. I really want to see that. It's called the Conjuring Arts Research Center. That's just cool. The Conjuring Arts. Magic is real.
I love it. Conjuring Arts Research Center. Man. Well, I'm adding that to my D&D campaign.
I know where I need to go next. It's got at least 12,000 books on magic in numerous different languages, and they have rare texts from the 15th century. That's really, really cool. I didn't know this. Did you know, here's another did you know fact, that librarians used to have to learn a specific style of handwriting?
That makes sense.
It was called library hand. It's a rounded style of cursive script. It was literally taught in schools for librarians. Let's see. Oh, during the period when library catalogs were filed on index cards. So being legible was super important.
Yep.
That makes sense.
I miss my card catalog. There was something, like, don't get me wrong, I love the convenience of the digital thing, but there was just something satisfying and going tick, 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 tick.
Oh, yeah. I get that. Everybody, I actually had someone... leave a review of one of my programs. Because one of the questions on the review was, what can the library do to better help your understanding or help your learning process? Whatever. Like, what can the library do better? And they wrote, bring the card catalog back. I miss it. And like, they put a smiley face. Like, they weren't being facetious. But I'm like, I can't lie. I never used the card catalog.
I grew up with it. It was fun. I liked it.
I had no idea. No idea. I really feel like I missed out. I love the old card catalog drawers, like how we used it for the seed library. Like, I mm-hmm. love the aesthetic, but I never got to use it. And I have one more fact to close us out.
Sure.
How can I phrase this as a question? How many years do you think it took for the most overdue library book to be returned?
Ooh, okay. 30?
122.
Oh, so somebody died. Got it.
One of the most overdue library books in the world was returned after 122 years. And it was at a Camden School of Arts lending library in Australia. It was a first edition of Charles Darwin's Insectivorous Plants returned to them. It had been checked out in 1889, and it had lain among the book collection of a retired veterinarian before the library stamp was noticed, and the book was returned 122 years later.
Oh, good. That must have been embarrassing.
Can you? And so that just goes to show, always return your library books, no matter how late they are. It'll be a good story.
Is there a fine?
I did not say so. Since it was a first edition, I can only imagine. But I would think after 122 years, they probably already paid it.
I mean, possibly, but at the same
time. Or would they run away? Like, just to return. I don't know. I don't know. But return your library books. That's so funny.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, though.
Don't be like that vet. Yeah. Don't wait 122.
I told you one, though, just before we got in and everything, and I think you... I might have mentioned this on the pod before. The most commonly checked out books in the library, you know that one.
Mm-hmm. And they are cookbooks.
Mm-hmm. But the second most commonly checked out books in the library come right after that.
And they are...
diet books.
a perfect pairing. Learn to cook. Learn to cook well. And then starve yourself. I mean, that's kind of what a lot of diet culture is. It's just funny. It's just funny.
Oh, yeah.
It's very ironic. I love that, though. And keep checking out our cookbooks. We have great cookbooks.
We do. We have some really good stuff.
Lots of variety.
Anywho, oh, we have been very long-winded today.
Yes, sorry about that. I really only thought that this would be like 20 minutes. I thought I was just going to rapid fire.
A quick adventure in and out 20 minutes.
Yep, that's how they go. Well, hopefully you enjoyed these fun, random, very random library reading and book facts for National Reading Month. Hopefully you celebrate by reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Pick up a book, a comic book, graphic novel. If you want, go listen to a book, you know, anything.
Yes. Yeah. Ask your local librarian for a good read.
Yep.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.